the Brandon Sherry Oddcast, sponsored by Metashare. To find out more about the radio show or Brant's book, Unoffendable, go to BrantHanson.com.
Hey, I'm Brant. Producer Sherry is alongside too. By the way, for some, our show is a little too silly.
For some.
But please know this. Like, off the air, it's worse. I want you to know that. Like, the silliness even gets ratcheted up a few notches. So we're actually sparing you.
We are. We're dialing it down for you.
Yeah, so please appreciate that, if you would. Please. Everybody is welcome here to this program, regardless of what your background is and or your present stuff that's going on in your world right now. You feel like, well, I don't measure up. I'm not good enough. I'm certainly not religious enough for this radio station. A lot of people actually feel that way. I want you to know you're welcome. And then there are the Pharisees. And then there are the self-righteous people who just tend to be judgmental and just want you to know that you are welcome here as well.
And you would count yourself
totally. Oh my goodness.
In that category.
Right.
That's what's interesting.
That's exactly right. I have a lot in common with you. And look, I know people who are like this, just naturally judgmental or pharisaical by nature. Maybe we were raised in church or with religion or whatever. There's some people who aren't religious and they're very pharisaical. I mean, it's just like a personality type almost. I got it. I got a lot in common with you. And I know you have a lot of good intentions too. Like, you want to protect what's right and true and good. I get it. I'm with you on that. But ultimately, God has to humble us. And if you've got even just a little strain of wanting that, just a little glint coming in the window there of, God, I do want you to humble me. I know at some level I'm this way. Like, that's great. Yeah, I think there's some beautiful days ahead. Hey, thanks for listening. My name is Brant, and Sherry is here too. We're just talking about being Pharisees by nature, which we are. I mean, I am especially, but a lot of people are.
Everybody has that self-righteous streak in them, thing. I was at Bible study last night, and one of the ladies stood up, and she was talking about something she's going through, and she said this statement, which was so bracing because you don't hear people say it often. She said, "I'm just so prideful." I'm so prideful. She kept going back to that. She said, and that was my issue. All the other things were stemming from that. And she said, until I was able to reach out to somebody and say, I have gotten myself into a mess. She said, I just knew it wasn't going to get better because I'm so prideful. And you don't hear people generally say that.
So refreshing. Unless it's backed up with, like, some of us will admit weaknesses, but like, that's just the way I am.
Right.
By golly.
That's right.
I'm a proud whatever. Like, but this, somebody literally go, no, this needs to be smashed. Mm-hmm. It's so rare and so refreshing. And clearly, I mean, everything I'm reading when I read the Bible, clearly God loves the honesty and just that glint of humility there somewhere. Speaking of honesty, we got started talking about this honesty and humility and what a difference it makes. Just saw this video. In fact, Sherry sent it to me. It's an interview of a woman, and she's a heroin addict. And the local TV news did an interview with her, and she has lived on the streets. She's got two teenage kids. Her honesty is so bracing. This interview is shocking to watch because of her honesty. She's saying, there's no hope for me. There's none. And the interviewer is kind of like, well, how could that possibly be? I mean, somebody could come along and help me. She said, no, there's not. The only hope is in Jesus, and I'm not willing to live that life, she said.
Right. I just watched that like, oh my goodness. I think because no one ever articulates that.
Nobody ever says that.
Yeah.
But it's true for an awful lot of people. She's like, no, I see. He's like, well, how do you know that that's true? Like, well, I see that with other people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are able to overcome this, to move up, but I'm not willing to do that. So there is no hope for me. Like, I know it sounds really depressing, but actually watching that was like, here's somebody being really, really honest. Because some of us do. Like, we'll walk away from God. We'll walk away, but we won't say it. We'll act like God walked away from us. We'll come up with reasons why it's his fault and not ours. And here's someone, the very one in a trillion type person, who would say, actually, I'm the problem. Hey there. If you ever want to connect with our show, my name's Brant, by the way. Producer Sherry is here, too. We love that. It's 855-90-BRANT.
And we do interact with that. I really love it. This is a great call.
You got a
really, really good call.
Okay. Sherry, you're just too awesome. You're too nice to Brant. I mean, you just need to be a little bit more hard on them. Seriously. You let them get by with too much. You're just too nice, too awesome. Brant's very lucky to have you.
Boy, that really touched my heart.
That's really something.
I mean, all of us need something that lifts us up in that.
He doesn't even start by listen to how this call started. Listen to this.
Sherry, you're just too awesome.
Why would he start? It's my show. You guys, I'm the show guy.
It's the Brant Hanson Show. We know. But he felt like he wanted to.
That call got prioritized. And it makes it on the air. I see. Thank you. This is pretty amazing, and our congratulations are in order for, I don't know if she listens to the show or not, maybe she listens to the podcast, but Julia Roberts has been named once again.
Not the most beautiful woman.
Yep.
Wow.
The most beautiful woman in the world.
That's a big place. The world's a big place,
Brant. It is, but they've determined, and it's her again, and she's won it 5 times now.
Mm-hmm.
So some years, she has off years, but then
she bounces right back.
She catches fire again and becomes the most beautiful woman on the planet. And I've traveled a lot, and I've seen people with various levels of attractiveness all over the world, but
obviously none that reach this level.
I thought I saw some that I would go, hey, that, she's probably prettier than, no, but no, because People Magazine, again, congratulations. To you, Julia.
You think she's listening to the podcast?
The most beautiful woman, again, in the world. You know what? I do have this theory. You give the average American woman that lighting.
That fan to blow the air. That makeup artist.
Artists.
Yes.
I mean, it's going to be plural.
Yes, it is.
Photoshoppers.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. There was this classic article, and I think it was on a People magazine or something. I just heard it pointed out before, and it was, oh, I can't remember who it was, Charlize Theron or whatever her name is, or something. It's like, she needs nothing. Like, it's like she's so beautiful. And then on the inside, they're did the credits for all the lighting and all the
stuff. So you do need something.
All the makeup artists and then the stuff that we added, and then thanks to these sponsors. Like, all this picture took like this team of 50 people.
Yep.
Yes,
so if you're looking at those pictures and you're wishing it was you, just know it would be if you had 50 people helping.
Sure help. All of this, man. So all that to say, I'm sure I'm not taking away from her beauty, whatever, but come on. If you ask kids, you know, what do you think about adults? Describe adults to me. You know what they're going to say, right? What's one big word that's going to come up? Boring. You guys are boring.
Well, I hope not.
Get around you more. Well, that's their impression.
Okay. Old. Old and boring.
Old and boring. Mm-hmm. But the boring thing, we can't do anything about old. But why would we be boring?
Good point.
But we are. Yeah. We really are. I've listened to our conversations. By this, I mean, like, I remember listening at the pool. I'd be playing with my kids every day in the afternoon. We lived in South Florida, and I would listen in on all the conversations of neighbors and people that were on the phone. Home values every day. Money, just snore.
Yeah.
So all that is to say, we don't have to be boring. In fact, I happen to know a lot of adults who aren't. And it's not a matter of education or anything. It's not like the immature people, they're fun. But the people who have to be inebriated to finally be interesting, that's they're boring. Okay, so I know surgeons who are a blast. Because there's this thing called joy that they have. And the reason they do surgery is because of their joy. Like this is part of their character that's been changed because of God, honestly. Totally different perspective. They're not under the same kind of pressure. And they're quite accomplished. It's not a matter of, you know, they're not being adult enough. No, they're saving lives. But joy changes everything. I don't know if you've ever done the personality type things, like the Enneagram or Myers-Briggs and that kind of stuff, or you do a little personality test. A lot of times what happens is people take it and they're like, yep, that's me. Even when you go down the weaknesses, like, yeah, that's me, man. I'll fight you.
Punch you in the right in the mouth.
It really is. Like, yeah. Like, we should embrace all the weaknesses.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's just who I am. Like, God wants to change your character.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a humility that comes from going, yeah, that's the way I am. Like, for me, it can be, brusque and rude to people because I'm a natural introvert and my natural setting is not to suffer fools gladly, to have intellectual superiority issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just laying it out there for you.
Somebody's in the car with the notebook, like, right.
They're already drafting emails. I don't like the guy. He has what I'm saying is it's not okay, and I don't want to be that way. So I think God's changed me and is changing me. It's not okay just to go, well, I'm just this way. No. Because he does change your personality. Now, he's going to take what he's given you disposition-wise, I believe, but those weaknesses, we don't want to hang on to those things because those are unloving. And I think he will because he brings more love, joy, peace, that whole list into our lives, meekness. A lot of that stuff destroys intellectual superiority stuff or insecurity. It's wonderful. A few days ago, we got a call about being unoffendable, being, not prone to anger when somebody does something that's wrong, like in your neighborhood. Lady was saying, neighbors let their dog come over and do his business in my yard. How do I handle this without getting angry? Like, well, you can still handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can get rid of the anger, forgive them because again, you know that you are also a moral failure in some areas, in blind areas. So you can extend forgiveness and then do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what to do about it? I don't know.
Which so we is posed the really question, yeah.
So all that talking doesn't really help.
I'm asking you what to do. You're telling me how not to do it.
I should do an advice call, Mark. Just rephrase your problem right back to you. Like, well, hey, thanks. Got it. Anyway, what should we do? So we got this call. I was like, hey, if anybody has ideas, like how to handle it. And I love this call.
I can't tell you where I'm from because I don't want to be identified. I'm going to say what not to do. I flipped the gift over into their yard with my shovel because I was sick of throwing it away. And my flipping action was way off, and it hit their window in their living room. And I had to run really fast into my house because I didn't know what to do. So I would suggest not flipping it over into their grass.
So we have a list developing of what not to do, and that's good. That's good.
I know that dawning feeling of realizing what you just did,
and then just take off running. This is my only recourse. I'm out of here.
I just hit their window with their own dog's.
I gotta get out of here.
Exactly. And now I have no choice but to run away. So don't do that.
Right.
That's the lesson from that very nice lady. Don't do that. Been talking a lot about pride on the show today. And here's one problem that I've had. And you might have it too. That is, if you grow up around church stuff, you think you know all you need to know. Or you kind of think, well, I'm so familiar with it. I'm so familiar with Jesus. You actually become unfamiliar with him because you don't learn. You already got this idea in your head. Like the way people say we learn to draw.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even looking at the tree anymore. We just draw what we've always drawn a tree looks like. We're not even looking anymore because we're so familiar with it. So we just do what we've always done. Well, that can be a real problem. Like, again, that's our pride getting in the way, intellectually lazy, but maybe God wants to show us aspects of who he is, and we're like, I got it, but we don't. And maybe we should keep our minds more supple and keep learning, because God's got so many facets, and they're all beautiful, but man, we can't possibly learn them all. I have really good news. Whoops. I have really good news.
Or all died in.
And terrible news.
Oh, no.
Really horrible news.
Okay.
So which do you want first? Do you want the really good news?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want the more distressing news?
I'll take the distressing news, please.
Okay. They're going to make another Fast and Furious movie.
Boy, that is distressing.
This one just came out, and they're already like, oh, we got plans for number 9 or whatever
it is. It's okay. That is distressing. What's the good news?
Well, the good news is that The Rock and Vin Diesel, who are in these programs,
yes, uh-huh.
apparently weren't getting along all that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
now they're friends again.
Oh, they're friends.
Yeah.
That's nice. So they'll both be in this
new one.
Okay.
I wonder if the $100 million they made over the weekend helped
bolster the relationship. Sure.
If any, yeah.
It would help me.
It would help me too. Fast friends. I'd be friends with you guys too if you just let me. This is probably not a surprise to you. People are really, 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 really stressed out. Really stressed out. Losing sleep. Most adults, according to this study, lose sleep every night because of money stuff. Maybe not every night, but since they lose sleep. Report losing sleep because of money concerns at night. Do you?
Do I? Around tax time, yeah, I had a couple of sleepless nights. Yeah, I did.
Sleepless nights?
Sleepless, and it
like
even
you're just
this,
out walking the neighborhood. I don't mean to make light
the
of
pajamas.
It.
No. Well, sometimes you just have to. Not sleepless in as much that people can probably identify with this. Even when I was sleeping, I wasn't really sleep. Like it was still in my mind. Right. Never really felt like I rested.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I'm laughing about it to set you up with a tax guy. Yeah. I thought that would help.
No,
anyway.
Actually, it did help. But yeah, I understand. I understand that statistic about
people more stressed
sleep.
Now than they were during the Depression.
Oh.
I just think it's a perspective thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Here's some good news. And look, we could do this literally every day on the show. We could do this. We could remind you that Jesus said, you don't need to be anxious. And he didn't qualify it either. It wasn't like, because the temptation is, well, you know, you took out those loans, you bought that car. Mm-hmm. I got it. And the wise person avoids debt. I got mm-hmm. it. But Jesus didn't qualify it. And tomorrow will take care of itself. And we're the only creatures on the planet who will borrow trouble from tomorrow. Things that haven't even happened yet. And we lose our perspective. And all that to say, I didn't say it. Jesus said it. I'm not making it up, and we need to be reminded, like, that's what he's telling you. If you don't mind, I would like to take you on a journey, into my brain.
Oh,
do you
man.
Mind?
Just let me put my seatbelt on here.
Okay, everybody strap in. Go into my brain.
Okay.
You're going to think, hey, you're making light of this. I'm making light of myself here, okay?
Okay.
I battle depression, okay? So in my mind, and it's kind of cyclical too, mm-hmm. but today is one of those days, and it has been the last several days, where I just like, I can't stand anything I say or write or do. I'm tired of me. Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel like I should quit. I'm a waste of time. I'm wasting other people's time. Like, enough of me. So that's how I feel. Okay, but I want you to take it inside my brain, and here's why, because a lot of people feel that way. But I've learned over time, it's just not true. So what I tell myself over is, what is true? God does love me. What I do is valuable for other people. I've heard otherwise. I'm not going to lock that out. So what happens is we have things that we fall back into thinking that aren't true. And the best way to handle that is go, yeah, I know. I know that's how I feel. You acknowledge it. But the real truth is otherwise.
So you're saying your feelings aren't necessarily truth.
Exactly. And that's I have good. To proactively like tell myself that, remind myself, that's just not the way it is. That there are good things in my life. And I have to say, okay, what am I thankful for? And start thinking about really deeply thankful for 2 or 3 big things. Because that's true. And again, I think it's part of being mentally healthy is going, yeah, I do. I fall back into this mode. But it's not reality, okay? So I'm going to keep going, and I ask God to help me. Love to hear what this is for your family. Are there words or phrases? We were talking about this the other day, like that only your family tends to use, and that you find yourself saying, and everybody's like, what?
And that's when you realize no one else says it but you.
For Sherry, it was trifling, which
yes.
means what?
Trifling means unbelievably lazy. That's how my family okay. used the word. My mom specifically used it. very, very liberally and continues to.
You ever want to connect with us? It's 855-90-BRANT.
Hey, this is Sabrina and Sherry. I love it. I thought I was the only one whose mother used the word trifling. She just brought up a can of worms. And I thank you for sharing your moment, because I almost used that word in a professional setting also myself. And I said, let me not say that because I wasn't sure of the outcome. Hope anybody would understand, but... thank you for that. That is funny. That is funny. Love it, Jerry.
So
good.
We've heard from several people. Maybe it's the Southern.
I think so, because I've heard people have tweeted me or sent Facebook messages saying, yes, my mom used that all the time. It just in a, I used it in a business setting, and trust me, the person I was speaking to had never heard it. She didn't know. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So anyway, we'd love to hear that. Your own family, like, we say this, and it doesn't always work in the outside world. 855-90-BRANT. Maybe you need to be reminded of this. I sure do on a daily basis. Like, what am I here for? Just in general, it's a big question. But it's good to revisit, because most of us can't answer the question. And I know this. I know this. Like, Jesus, when he's praying, he's teaching us how to pray. He says, your kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. And you think about the way things are when God's around, how he restores things and heals things and makes things beautiful again. He's a healer. He's a peacemaker. Like, the things he has in store, I want to bring that into my world. And how can I be that in my neighborhood? Or I remember being in Afghanistan. I've been in Afghanistan a few times to visit cure hospitals. Well, the whole city of Kabul, if you've ever been there, it's dust and the smell of like diesel in the air. And there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of anger amongst other Afghans. I mean, the streets are just difficult. It's a difficult place, hot. And I remember ducking behind a wall one time. There's a door. He's like, we're going to eat here. I had a friend with me. We duck behind this door and it's answered by a child, like 10 years old, a boy who had a towel over his arm. And he said, bonjour, monsieur. And he was an Afghan, but he's speaking French. And we went inside. It was immediately, like, there's flowers everywhere. It was gorgeous. And there was another child. And I found out that the owners, some French people who were believers, had adopted these kids who were orphans and were teaching them job skills. And were letting them help around the restaurant as well. So they were our waiters. And we went into this courtyard, again, full of beautiful flowers. And we heard music. Classical music was on. I mean, this is behind the corrugated metal wall from the dust and diesel street. And I couldn't help but think, this is the kingdom of God. I mean, they're doing something beautiful here. And they made this great breakfast for us, and it was so sweet and kind, and we got to know them. Like, in the midst of all that, like, there's a little glimpse. Sometimes it's hard to see it. Like, there's a little glimpse of somebody going, I'm gonna live out what God wants me to do. And then you get to see just how beautiful that can be. Appreciate the people who knew that I would be interested in this. There's this little tiny village that they have set up. Here's the problem, though. Because they know I like little tiny villages, like Christmas villages.
Mm-hmm.
But they set it up at Times Square in New York.
Okay.
Problem is, yeah, it's tiny, but it's not. There's tiny, tiny people. They have 100,000 tiny people in it.
That's nice. No, well, now I'm guessing no, that's not nice.
No, because, I mean, 100,000, I guess it's okay, but it's like, I like the tiny villages because they're peaceful. But okay. This is like miniature city, and it has all sorts of stuff going on. Just, like, there's a Rolling Stones concert going on. Like, little tiny Rolling Stones guys.
So it's a tiny metropolis. You're not interested in that. You want a tiny town.
Cruise ships going up and down. It's just like this big, there's people getting arrested. Like police activity.
Okay, Brand, it happens.
I don't want that in my tiny village. I want the peaceful stuff. Okay. I don't want people getting taken down and getting arrested.
tiny criminals.
I don't want the Dickensian stuff without that. Okay? Without the arrests and the police activity. All right, it's time to get in trouble.
As we are wont to do.
Yeah. Can't really do this one on the radio because people will hear it differently.
We had a lot of trouble stuff on the podcast. Should we even? I mean, we had the whole Abraham Lincoln situation.
Yeah, I feel bad about that one.
And then the rapture.
Rapture one.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Big Bird smoking camels. No, it was Newports. So there's that. Just,
I didn't specify what.
I did.
I just noticed his voice was raspier.
I said Newports. That's because what I remember growing up. Okay. All right, that's so offensive. I just want the key. I'd like you to keep these things in mind and govern yourself accordingly as you go down this road.
Right. Okay. So we're going to get in trouble for something. First,
okay.
About offensiveness, just talking with a friend who said he wrote a song a while back, a worship song.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually appreciated the guy pointing it out, the problem with the song, because he likened God's love to a hurricane in the song.
Okay.
Now, this is years before the John Mark McMillan song that David Crowder did a version of.
Yeah.
But the guy is like, hey, you know, people have been through hurricanes, you lose your home, you know, it can be, you know, you can lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not appropriate for you to bring that up in that context. And okay. I'm like, you know, then you can't write a song.
Okay.
You can't use any poetic anything. I was just telling him, like, please don't let that get you down.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing. I don't know if it's Carl Barth said it or Rich Mullins originally. I can't remember, but there's a song called The Love of God, and it's called... says it's a reckless raging fury.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the love of God. Like that has stuck with me since I was in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it.
It's poetry. That's what poetry's supposed to be about.
And it's in Psalms. This kind of stuff is all over the book. So I just
that's
like
true.
If you want to find something in any song, I was telling you, if you're gonna be poetic, I told him that too. Like any poetry at all, somebody's gonna find a problem with the metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, technically it's not a hurricane per se.
Yes, my trailer wasn't picked up and rolled across the county. That's not what I was trying to say.
But you know what? It could cause you to lose your home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And your life, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a hurricane. Does it mess things up? Yeah.
Mm.
Yes, it does. Does it disorder things? Yes. Mm. Can a hurricane wind up being a blessing? Yes.
Mm.
Like, so all that stuff. I just think it's interesting because anybody who sits down to write something, you try to do something, produce something. If somebody has a critical lens, and I do, by the way, I mean, I could sit down and find something.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to say, in case that's you, like, don't let that stop you.
Yeah. Like, and in fact, it helps to anticipate it.
Totally.
I think about that in regards to the show, even though I was talking about all the other stuff that we've done. I do think, I mean, we got a somewhat critical note from someone this week. And I always think about, okay, there are potentially millions of people listening to, at least hundreds of thousands of people, to think that no one is going to have a criticism.
Impossible.
It's impossible.
The thing I don't want to do, and I like that prayer of Jabez. I do like that prayer.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the Bible, and a guy wrote a book about it years ago, and some people didn't like the book or mm-hmm. misused it or whatever, but the prayer is there, and this guy is praying to God to increase my territory
mm-hmm.
that I might not cause harm is in there. There's
yeah.
something about I don't want to cause harm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't want to cause harm.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to say something that hurts somebody ever.
Right.
But on the other hand... people can, if they want, they can be harmed. They can choose it.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're doing something creative, poetry and things like that.
Totally.
That you just have to be able to say whatever it is you want to say. Again, you don't want to create harm. But if you try to sit and wait for everyone to like it, it's just never going to happen.
Yeah, totally. All right. So now with that in mind, let's start offending people. There's a thing that was in Christianity Today. You can read the full deal. I'm just going to seize on one part of it. It was a poll that was done about church stuff, and it says that half of Protestants in this poll say why they attend church. Like, why do you go to church? What do you attend? A, in the Bible, there is no attend church. It doesn't even make any sense.
Because
you are the church.
Yeah.
So there's no attending. But okay. But why do you attend? And half the people said
half.
Yes. Half said because of, quote, dynamic religious leaders who are entertaining and inspiring
mm-hmm.
and interesting. Okay, so that's half. To me, if I saw that and I was employed as a speaking pastor,
mm-hmm.
I'd really be like, oh, my goodness, what have we done? Oh, my goodness, that's a major crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that's what's happening, that people see that thing and it's just like a bomb that goes off. Like, we have totally... what have we done to teach people that you attend church and you attend it
because of dynamic religious leaders who are interesting and inspiring. Can you find any example of that being honored as an idea of church in the New Testament?
No, but I see where Paul is talking to the church. In Corinthians, I think, maybe Romans, I'm not sure. And he's saying, because there were people who were saying, I like Paul. And someone was like, well, I particularly like Peter. Uh-huh. And someone was like, I like Apollos. And he said, you're still kids then. Now that's
right.
That's what
right.
he said.
Right.
Not me. He said, if that's where you're at, then you're still immature. And, you know, that's difficult because all of us like, you know, a certain style, whatever. But the Bible did address it and not in a positive way.
Well, and yeah, does it ever address positively dynamic religious leaders or even talk about it who are inspiring? Like,
no. Well, they were too busy being fed to the lions.
Yeah, exactly.
We right. just got a lot of time on our hands, I think.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
What people were drawn to, and you can study this historically, but I'm very confident based on what I've read, that people were drawn to the one anothering that was going on in a culture that just didn't do that. The culture was not about leveling the playing field across, you know, male, female, Greek,
rich, poor,
non-Greek, you know,
yeah.
Roman citizens, not like slave master even. And here comes the church and they're embodying this whole thing where it's different. And because they were under persecution, it was even difficult to accept people into the community very easily. Because some people would come in as government agents, or they were actually going to blow the whistle on you. So they had to make people, they're like holding people at arm's length. I'm talking about immediately after the New Testament period, because they were afraid of being compromised. But so compelling was it still grew like crazy, because people saw that love. And we've redefined church so that people don't even know what it means anymore. I mean, so I don't know how else to interpret that. So now that's about you consuming a product. I would just, I know that people who are serious about the Bible would look at that and be like, whoa.
Yeah.
But I do think we've kind of created this, so the people who've created it are not going to be too upset about it.
Or they'll, I don't want to say justify it even. It'll be like, well, really what it is. And I say that from someone, and you as well, who comes from being totally embedded in church culture our whole life.
Right, right, right.
And so a lot of times you'll see it, and the inclination, it may be the inclination of people listening right now, is to defend the model.
Right.
Because it's the only model that we know. It's the only model that we have. So it's like, no, but that's the inclination. So sometimes if you can just step a little bit outside of that and be able to look, and that look can be... It can be hard sometimes to step back and look at something that you've cherished for so long and then say, what exactly is happening here?
Uh-huh.
That could be difficult, but necessary.
Uh-huh. And it may be, especially if you're younger, and that's such a great point you made, points. But like, especially if you're younger in your faith and you've only experienced this model, this can be hard to hear. Like, well, what are you talking about? And what I'm saying is that the way we perceive of church in America, for instance, and the way we've spread it around the world too, it's we've set up a model that's not necessarily connected to the Bible's idea of the ecclesia, what that is. These people called out for God's purpose, who do community together, and when they get together, each one has a word or a song or something. Like, so you want another, you get a chance to do that, and we like a theater setting. So, and it doesn't make it wrong. But the idea that this is the only way we can do it, we can't even conceive of another way of doing it. Somebody's going to plan a church, like, let's get a stage and a microphone. Like, it's just we can't conceive of it another way. And by the way, I go now, my wife and I are involved with a church that has a microphone stage. I mean, that's America. So I'm not saying, hey, how dare you? It's just more of a, this is what you get when that's what you equate with the idea of church. And then we lose so many awesome things. We lose beautiful things and people being empowered to use their own spiritual gifts for other people, because now they think the church is attending a thing with an inspiring speaker.
Yeah.
Not being part of life together where they get to use their gifts. And you see how people grow when they actually get to use their gifts.
True. And where there isn't this, how can I describe it? This hierarchy of gifts. so that you feel as if that dynamic speaker thing is the end all be all. Like, that's the top of the heap.
Right.
And then, you know, if I'm a person who can do this or that, well, that's a little lower and a little lower and a little lower.
Yep.
You just end up either kind of putting yourself in that on that ladder or just not doing it at all. And we have a lot of people who have said, I don't understand this.
Right.
And I don't want it. And we can, you know, we can criticize those people if we want to, but it does, it should, I would think. You read this and it should make you step back a little bit and be like, can I understand why someone would look from the outside in and say, I have that in the world.
Right.
I have dynamic speakers.
And some of the speakers in the world are more dynamic.
I was going to say better.
If we're going to compete on that level.
That's true. So
yeah, like
maybe a little dissonance, and I encourage people to at least think about it.
Well, it goes back quite a ways. If you study like the way Greeks did their thing, they had people who were storytellers and orators, and it became like a sport. And they built theaters. I mean, they pioneered drama and theater. And the ones who were really good storytellers on the street, I mean, you drop in a tip, they did a great thing, so they passed the hat.
Mm-hmm.
If they did a great story, you give them a tip. But then the really good ones got their own speaking houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'd speak and then pass the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was set up in a theater setting. Well, that's a Greek thing. Again, nothing evil about that in and of itself. But, man, if that's our understanding of what church is, then we're missing out on something really beautiful. And
not only would we be missing out, but those who need church as it actually is,
right,
are missing out as well, because there's nothing
totally
to desire about that, because it's already kind of existing already in other forms.
And then we're left trying to invite people to this thing that they may or may not need,
mm-hmm,
instead of what we know they need, which is us.
Yeah.
So, and being part of us,
mm-hmm,
as a culture. And of course we get together for deliberate prayer, and of course we get together to be together deliberately to encourage each other in Christ. Mm-hmm. It's not just happenstance, but I would think this would really bother people. Half don't understand that shows, like, I don't know what church is. Half.
This has been the Brant and Sherry Oddcast, sponsored by MediShare. To find out more about the radio show or Brant's book, Unoffendable, go to BrantHanson.com.